I remember ago in leading a meeting, about 1,000 people there, and I was with some others on the platform, and the meeting had been going for about 45 minutes or so, and at that point I was sitting down. The worship, you know, was continuing. We'd not got to the word yet, and you know, and I opened my eyes, and I always remember this. I was sitting on a chair, and I just happened to, you know, open my eyes and glance down, and on my thigh here was this enormous stain. You know, it was. I couldn't quite tell what color it was, but it was this dark stain, and I thought, you know, there's about 1,000 people in this room, and I must have been the last one to see it. You know, and I was so embarrassed. I didn't know whether to kind of cover it with hymn books and whatever, and you know, back out, you know, and whatever. So I thought, I got to get out of here. And so I moved, and it disappeared. And what I realized, to my immense relief, is I was sitting directly under a red spotlight, which was coming right down here and throwing this big shadow, you know. And there was this horrible feeling, you know, that I'm stained, I'm embarrassed, you know, I need to get out of here. And I think that one of the wonderful things that happens when we minister to Jesus, it's very purifying, isn't it? We don't do it for that reason, but it is to be in the presence of the Lord is very purifying, because we know we're clean, but the enemy loves to throw a shadow, and he loves to say, you're stained, you shouldn't be here, you need to get out quickly. And one of the things that we're going to do in this session, which actually we don't usually do at these kind of conferences, is we're going to talk a little about what happens in us as we minister to Jesus. Now, we don't minister to Jesus that anything might happen in us. We want it to happen in his heart. But the first session today, and if we don't get through it, we'll continue at lunchtime, is actually talking about that, because it's important to know what's happening in us. And so we're going to be kind of going in three directions. We're going to be looking at what happens in us, and that's kind of the lowest level, if you want, when we minister to Jesus. Then we're going to be looking at what happens in him, okay, as we pour out our love on him, as we anoint his head, as we anoint his feet with our love. And then lastly, we're going to be looking at what happens in heaven as we do all this. Because I think that I remember talking with a pastor from Christ Community, he wouldn't mind me saying this, is with his brother up in Minneapolis. And I think his brother is a lawyer, not a Christian. And he was saying to him, he was saying, look, I get together with some lawyers, some doctors, some business people, etc. And I reckon there was about 10 of them, very rich and influential people. He said, I reckon we do more together to change society than your church does. That's what he said to his brother. I mean, you can be honest with your brother, can't you? You know, he's a pastor. And he wasn't kind of accusing him. He was just saying, I really don't think that you are very effective. I think the 10 of us in Minneapolis do more good than you do. A kind of a brotherly kind of thing, you know, going on. And what I want to, now you could say, okay, here we are, we're on the brink of war, okay, with Iraq. We're facing a major catastrophe in Africa of AIDS and famine. We're besieged at home with possible terrorists activities. Now, if you've got 2 days, why aren't you praying about those things? You know, why are you in this basement quietly ministering to Jesus? You know, why aren't you, you know, where the action is, even if in prayer? Well, what I want to say in our third session is that we are. We are in the heart of the action. We're in the heart of the action. And I wasn't going to say this, but it is related, and you'll see why it's related this afternoon, if you've not fallen asleep by then. And I will never forget this. In London, we had two severely disabled women. I mean, this is Sandra and Elaine. Very, very disabled. And just outside of my house was a park. Just literally within very easy walking distance. 2 minutes walk, big park. And the Gulf War had broken out. You know, and if you remember the Gulf War, we thought it really might be a Holocaust. We didn't know what was going to happen. And I always remember at lunchtime, I went for a walk around the park, and I saw Sandra and Elaine in their wheelchairs parked under a tree. And I went up to them and said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "We're praying for the Gulf." And as I went, I was actually praying in the park myself, I thought, you know, I reckon that those two disabled ladies are going to do more to affect what happens in the next few weeks than most other people. Okay. Now, they were actually directly praying. What we're doing is equally strategic, and we're going to come to that. When we minister to Jesus, something happens in heaven, okay, and that gets into the earth, but we're going there this afternoon. So let's begin. Gospel of John. Everything in this session is in the Gospel of John. And I want you to find chapter 1, and then I want you to find chapter 21, the first and the last chapters. And I'm going to mention, and I probably won't finish in this session, but I want to talk about five things that happen in us as we minister to the Lord. Five things that happen in us. As it were, we're on the basement level, and we're going to be kind of climbing up as we go through the day. And so John chapter 1 and then chapter 21, and just one verse in chapter 1, okay, which is verse 18, and most of you could memorize that. It simply says, "No man has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son," or it might have in your Bible, "the only begotten God," okay. Now, if you've got an NIV here, it says, "who is at the Father's side, he has revealed him." He has revealed him. And the word for reveal is the word apocalypse. And all the word apocalypse means, I mean, it's a very important word. It's simply if something is covered up, okay, apocalypse is that you do this. You reveal it. It was covered up before, and now it is revealed. Actually, the word apocalypse has nothing to do with the end of the age or anything like that. That's why the last book of the Bible is called the Apocalypse, because it is the revelation of who? That's right, the revelation of Jesus Christ. That's what happens in the book. That's why it's called the Apocalypse. Now, verse 18, "No man has seen God at any time. The only begotten God," NIV, "who's at the Father's side, he has explained it." He has revealed him. Or he has pulled the cover off, or he has disclosed him, whatever you like. Now, I use the NIV, which at this point is wrong. Now, it's wrong simply for this reason, that the translators had a problem, that if this was going to be generally read, okay, by people, they might not understand it if they simply translated what the Greek said. Now, who's got another translation, or who can remember the King James Version and what it says here? Okay, "No man has seen God at any time. The only begotten God," or "the only begotten Son," who is where? "In the bosom of the Father." That's what it says. Now, there's no discussion about that. It's just that the NIV, they're looking now for an audience that's not biblically literate, and they're going to, this kind of bosom language, it embarrasses us, and so we'll take it out. But it's there, okay? It's in the beginning. Jesus is in the bosom of the Father. That's how the book opens up. So let's go to the close of the book, chapter 21. Chapter 21 and verse 20. Okay, that was the beginning. So the book begins by Jesus being in the bosom of the Father, but it doesn't end there. And so chapter 21 and verse 20, they're walking on the beach. Jesus has said something to Peter, and then Peter, turning round, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them along the beach. The one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper, NIV. Okay, wrong again, because this is even more embarrassing. This is not a question of what the Greek text says. Okay, it's a question of not embarrassing a contemporary readership. And so, let's go again, 21:20. Peter turned around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. What should it read? The one who had leaned on his bosom at the supper. That's what it says. And so the gospel opens up with Jesus in the bosom of the Father, and it ends with John in the bosom of Jesus. That is the gospel, okay? That's where we go, you see. Just as Jesus has been in the bosom of the Father, end of the gospel. Why is there a gospel? So that John, so that you, might be in the bosom of Jesus. And so I'm going to hang a word on each point. And the first word is relocation. Now, something happened to me this morning in that room, okay? I got relocated into another place. I began my day with a headache. It continued with a phone call from Korea. It went to another phone call from London. These weren't, "Hi, Dad, I love you, have a good day" phone calls. They were problem issues. You know, and they hit you before 8 in the morning. That is life. That's where you live. That's where you'll be on Monday. But when I got in that room, I got spiritually relocated. Okay, where was I? I was in the bosom of Jesus. That's what happens. And you see, as we minister to Jesus, we don't do it for this reason, but suddenly we find we have been dislocated, thank the Lord, from the phone calls, Korea, London, problems, etc. And we've been relocated, and now we are in the bosom of Jesus. Now, the reason in the church for 1,500 years they had something which they called the divine office, or they might have called it the divine hours or the daily office, which was that there was this practice, not just among the clergy, okay, of the hours. What are the hours? Somebody tell me. What are the divine hours or the divine office? Okay, many of you know. It's this pattern of you pray in the morning, okay? You pray again at lunchtime. You pray at sundown. You pray before you go to bed. And many pray in the middle of the night. And there's even David, you remember, spoke about seeking the Lord 3 times a day. Now, why did they do that? And all around the globe, that's still happening. In the evangelical church, perhaps not so formally, okay? In Eastern Orthodoxy, all around the world. I mean, I often wake up in the middle of the night, and often I wake up around 3, and I think of all the people that night, all the saints around the world who got up at 3 to pray. Because, you see, they were following this wonderful kind of rotation that's been in the church for 1,500 years. Now, that's what we're doing. We're getting back to that. Doesn't have to be called the divine hours, or any, we can call it ministering to Jesus. But why do you do it, you see? You do it so that you might get relocated. And even, I don't know how many of you have been to India or how many of you have been to Mother Teresa's home in Calcutta. You see, if you are, okay, in with the Sisters of Charity, not a volunteer, you've been there, Daphne, haven't you? Okay. If you're with the Sisters of Charity and you are feeding a dying person, because it's a home for the dying, and the bell rings for prayer, what do you have to do, Daphne? You have to stop. Hey, this is a dying person. And you, now, usually you can hand over the bowl to a volunteer. That's why they're there. But you have to get relocated because, you see, everything flows out of that place. Now, John is going to go out and change his generation. But you can only do that if you've learned to live in another place, in the bosom of Jesus. Now, it's not easy. That's why they established these kind of hours of prayer. It's not easy for us. And by the way, you might think that that's impossible. I was listening to an interview with Noreen Norrish 2 days ago on public radio, 7 a.m. This is amazing. They don't usually do things like this. And she's a writer, she spent 3 years in a Benedictine monastery. She didn't live there. She just went in for all their times of prayer because she wanted to relocate back into the presence of God. And she said, I couldn't believe how much work I got done when I prayed 3 times a day. That I was absolute, but that's what happened, you see. And we need to get relocated. And when we learn to live in the bosom of Jesus, everything flows out of that. But it's not easy. I can remember, I don't know if I ever told Jenny this because it's a bit embarrassing, but I can remember we were living in Forest Hill in a road called Devonshire Road, and we moved to another place called East Dulwich to a road called Derwent Grove. And I would usually work at the church office. End of the day, I jump in my car. And you know how it is, Jim. You're on autopilot when you leave work, you know. And I would find myself, you know, we have moved from Devonshire Road. Okay, we have moved from Forest Hill. We're now living in East Dulwich in Derwent Grove. And I would wake up, as it were. I mean, I wasn't sleeping in the car, but you know how it is, autopilot, turning into Devonshire Road. And I would think, I don't live here anymore. What am I doing here? And I had to embarrassingly, you know, turn the car around and go to where I really should be, you see. And that's what this gospel is all about. It begins, Jesus is in the bosom of the Father, but there's a gospel. Why is there a gospel? That I might end up, John might end up, in the bosom of Jesus, relocated, because out of that relocation, life is going to flow. Now, we don't do it for that reason, but that does happen. That does happen. And so we've got to learn to live in the bosom of Jesus. Okay? And sorry if that embarrasses you, but that's what the Bible says. Okay? And we'll go on. And something, you don't actually have to even pray. Now, what happens with the cycle of prayer, with the cycle of ministering to Jesus, is it reinforces where you need to live all the time. And I don't know if this happened. How many of you learned to swim before you learned to float? Did anybody learn to swim before you learned to float? Okay, you did. I did as well. I actually believe floating was impossible. You know, people would tell me, all you have to do is this. You just have to lay back and relax. And so I would say, I'd lay back, relax, and I'd start doing this, and pretty soon I'd be choking. And I thought, I'm not into this floating business. I can work on the water and stay up, stay on top. And so I was a little boy, and I'd splash my way up and down the pool, and somebody would say, let's float. And I would say, I can't float. I mean, it didn't mean I didn't know how to float. It was impossible for me to float. I was, you know, different body chemistry, you know, different, you know, fat ratio or bone ratio. There was something different with me. I could work at it, but I couldn't. And then one day, I think when no one was watching, I thought, I probably can. But you know the trick. What's the trick of floating? You've really got to... I mean, you don't, how can water hold you up? I mean, it's silly, isn't it? Water doesn't, but it does, you see. And there's something about the spiritual life, you see. You know, we splash up and down the pool, and we get tired, and we say, Lord, I'm sinking. You know, well, what do? You float, you see. You float. You just stretch out, and you lean back, and it holds you up. And you see, that's what it means to be relocate it from where you are into the bosom of Jesus. And that's not why we're here today, but that is what will happen to you today. Number one, relocation. Number two, back to John 13. John 13, we're still in the Gospel of John. John 13, because when relocation happens, then communication takes place. Okay? Relocation number one, communication number two. John 13 and verse 23. Here we are again. And there was NIV reclining next to Jesus. That is so silly. It's not what it says, okay? It's just, again, their contemporary sensibilities. What it says is there was reclining on Jesus' bosom. Same word again. One of his disciples whom Jesus loved, okay? Now, what happened just prior to this in verse 21 and 22 is that there they were reclining. Now, I should say that they didn't always recline, okay? You reclined usually for special occasions, okay? Special meal, Thanksgiving, you know, whatever. These were reclining, Passover, you know. These were when you reclined. You know, if you were just, you know, having a normal meal, you didn't, can you imagine reclining with four preschoolers in your family? I mean, that would not be a happy scene. Do you see what I mean? They were just like us. But hey, when it was a special time, you were to... Now, at Passover, reclining was mandatory for the Passover meal. Now, isn't that interesting? Paul says, a Christ, our Paschal Lamb, has been sacrificed. Therefore, let us celebrate the feast. That's where we live now, you see. We live reclining, just as John did on Jesus' bosom at the feast. But what had happened, verse 21 and 22, there they were in the circle. Now, I need to kind of explain this to you, and I'm sorry, this is the best I could do, okay? I had a wonderful picture, because the Pushtuns still do this. I don't know if I could use people. Terry, I know you really well, so you come up here, okay, for a minute. Okay, you come up here. Well, you just got to see this. This is so wonderful. Okay, and Jenny, I know her really well. And so, Jenny, I want you to lie on the floor. I want you to lie on the floor, okay, on your side, with your, you know, they're perfect, perfect. Okay, now, the disciples were in, Terry, you need to know where you've got to go. See, just get comfortable there. See, she doesn't know how to recline, obviously. This is all. Come on, you don't need to see me. You just need to... Okay, okay. Now, you see, this is what was happening. Okay, now this looks really silly, but it's the only way I know how to do it, you see. There they are. Now, actually, you can see, they're only as far apart as you are. Okay, look at how close your head is to the person next to you, see, the person next to you. Yeah, but, hey, they're reclining. You know, they really knew how to, you know, how to hang out here. Okay, so Terry, I want you to lie down, and I want you to lean on Jenny.
Okay,
so just like John was. Now, you see, Terry's not getting too close, okay? This is just all a little bit embarrassing, you see, okay? And it was men that did this. I mean, this is even more... Hey, get down there. Get down there. So, see, we don't know much about reclining. And we certainly don't know much about reclining on the other person. Now, don't look at me. Just stay where you are, okay? Now, what happens is that, okay, there was reclining on Jesus' bosom one of his disciples whom he loved. Now, what a wonderful picture. But John is just there, kind of snuggled up against Jesus. I mean, it's an extraordinarily intimate thing, okay? And Simon Peter, because Jesus had just said, one of you is going to betray me. Verse 24, therefore, Simon Peter gestured to John. You see, here's John over here. okay, lying against, and here's Peter over here, and he wants to know, hey, who's going to betray him? Who's going to betray him? So you see, Peter is over there, and he goes to John. Who is it? And you see, now, verse 25, leaning back on Jesus' bosom, John said, Lord, who is it? And Jesus answered, you see, no one else could hear because John had his head next to the heart of Jesus. Jesus answered, it's the one for whom I shall dip the morsel. You see, now, all Terry needs to do is just flip your head a bit, Terry. Okay, that's it, you see. And John says, who is it, Lord? And Jesus says, just only John can hear. Now, why can only John hear? Because he has his head next to the heart of Jesus. You see the point? And so, okay, you can get up. You're totally embarrassed, I know. Okay. So, but you get the point. You get the point. Now, you see, when relocation happens, communication takes place. Now that's not why we lean into Jesus, but that's what happens. You get in that room, okay, and God will start talking to you. That's not why you're there, you see. But when you get quiet, you see, you can hear what none of the others could hear because you've got your head next to the heart of Jesus. And that's where we need to be. And I remember, again, it was some years ago, that there was this wonderful man in England, you'd never heard of him, okay? His name is Bill Thompson, and he lived in the middle of England, and he had an extraordinary healing ministry. But he's one of these quiet people, no big meetings, nothing like that. And it will be Sue's mother, okay, which was, her brother's wife. Mother, her brother's wife's mother, okay, was dying of cancer. Your sister-in-law's mother. She was dying of cancer. And so I wanted to go up and pray with her. This is way up in the miles away from where we live. So I got the train up, and I phoned Bill Turner, and I said, Bill, could you come with me to pray for her? So Bill picked me up at the station. He's probably one of the poorest men I've ever met, you know, because he wanted to be hidden away. But this is the man who just lived in the bosom of Jesus. In fact, so much so, and I kid you not, he would phone up the security, this is the army, and tell them where the IRA had put bombs in Northern Ireland. Because, you see, he had his head. And Bill looked at me, and he said, oh, yeah, he said, we should, shouldn't we? And so he walked over to his little keyboard, he had a little keyboard, and he sits down at his keyboard, and he starts to play music. He's not talking to me, he's not looking at me, he's just playing music, you know. And I think, hey, we need to pray, you know, get us some power flying here. Sitting at his keyboard, playing music, you know, whatever, totally ignoring me. And anyway, this goes on for I don't know how long, and then he stops and he says, let's go. Go, you know. You see, what had he done? He'd done some relocation so that there might be some communication and that he might know how to pray. Now, I can probably only do one more scripture and then we've got to finish and we'll carry on. We got five, okay, we're on number two. But that's all right, we got all day, so that's fine. So let's go just for a moment to 1 Samuel chapter 3. 1 Samuel chapter 3, just as an example. And then we'll just continue this at lunchtime, and I can get through without rushing. 1 Samuel 3, okay, now you know this passage, okay, but this passage, if you were a Jew, would shock you. This is a scandal. This is a scandal we're going to read about, okay? 1 Samuel chapter 3. Now the boy, Samuel, was ministering to the Lord. Okay? The boy, Samuel, was ministering to the Lord. Already we've got a scandal. How old did you have to be to minister to the Lord? 30 years old. He's a boy. Boys should not do this. What tribe did you have to be from? Levi. Samuel was from Ephraim. Okay, he shouldn't be doing this. You know, it's just like when the children were in the temple and the Pharisees wanted to get them out, and but they were singing Hosanna to Jesus. If God doesn't mind, but the law doesn't like it, okay? That might sound funny to you, but talk to me afterwards, okay? Verse 3 gets even worse. And the lamp of God had not yet gone out. And you see, this is supposed to shock you. And Samuel was lying down in the temple. I don't know of anybody else in the Bible who laid down in the temple. You're not supposed to lay down in the temple. Or are you? Or are you? Jesus is in the bosom of the Father so that we can be in the bosom of Jesus. Jesus is the temple. Destroy this body, and in 3 days I'll raise it up. And so I'm laying down in him. And so is he foreshadowing something? So he's laying down. Now it's interesting it says temple, because it wasn't the temple, was it? What was it? It was a tabernacle. The temple hadn't been built yet. But I think the word is used, you see, the temple was this majestic building, this kind of magisterial, you know, building. I think it's supposed to shock us, you see. That's where this boy, he wasn't from Levi, he wasn't 30 years old, and he's in the temple laying down. And it gets even worse, because then it simply adds on, he's laying down where the ark of God was. Hey, guys, that's illegal. You're not supposed to do that. Now, we're not actually told where he was. He couldn't have just been outside the tabernacle, so he at least had to be in it. You at least had to be in the holy place. But you see, you're not supposed to know exactly where he was laying down, because all you're supposed to know is that he was laying down where the ark of God was. And so he's a boy. He's not a Levite. He shouldn't be laying down, and he certainly shouldn't be proximate to the Shekinah glory. But you see, that's where there's relocation. He gets relocated. He's from the hill country of Ephraim. But you see, in relocation, we learn to lay down, okay, in the midst of the Shekinah. In fact, the Jews used to say, where two or three are gathered, there is the Shekinah in the midst, after the temple was destroyed. They said, where two or three are gathered, there is the Shekinah, okay? Jesus picks up on that, and he says, where two or three are gathered, there am I. He is the Shekinah. He is the glory, you see. And we lay down. We shouldn't be in there. We shouldn't be in there. We can't lay on the bosom of this one who's the majesty of God. Oh, yes, we can. We're invited in, just as this boy. Now, when relocation happens, the next thing that happens in Samuel's life is communication. In that day, the word of the Lord was rare, and there was no frequent vision. But this boy learns to creep into the temple, okay? Not just to minister to the Lord. And even when he's finishing ministering, he just wants to lay down in that place. We don't know how close he got to the ark, but you're supposed to see that he's nearly snuggled up to it, even if he wasn't. That's the point of the sentence. It's supposed to shock you. You're supposed to say, we can't do this. And that's why, you see, that's why we have a gospel. It opens up with Jesus in the bosom of the Father. Okay, but then we have a gospel so that you might be able to lay down in the bosom of Jesus. There's relocation, and when relocation happens, God starts to speak. There's communication. The word of the Lord came to Samuel, and then the word of Samuel came to all Israel. All Israel. Now, that's not why we minister to Jesus, but this is, believe me, okay, the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord. He's laying down in the temple where the ark of God was. And then the Lord speaks. And he will to you today. And he will. Is that why we do it? No. okay? But indeed, it does happen. Well, the rest is going to have to come at lunchtime.